You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Justice Stephen Breyer officially announced his retirement from the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday. President Joe Biden reiterated a promise to replace Breyer with a black woman talking yesterday.
While I've been studying candidates' backgrounds and writings, I've made no decision except one. The person I will nominate will be someone with extraordinary qualifications, character, experience, and integrity. And that person will be the first black woman ever nominated to the United States Supreme Court. It's long overdue, in my view.
Breyer's replacement would join a court that currently has a conservative majority of 6-3. We're talking about Justice Stephen Breyer's retirement, what it means for the future of the Supreme Court. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about Justice Breyer's decision to retire and to announce it this week? Do you think it was the right move? What are you hoping to see in the replacement process? What are your thoughts on the direction the court has moved in recent years? Do you have questions for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Are there particular issues that are before the court or that might come before the court that you are particularly concerned about? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kimmy King is a professor and interim chair of the political science department at the University of North Texas. Kimmy, welcome back to Central Time.
Always good to be on public radio.
Can you talk about the timing of Justice Breyer's retirement announcement and his planned retirement date?
It's actually not so unexpected, given the age of Justice Breyer and the fact that typically when you look in the past at Supreme Court justices, they typically try to retire under the administration of, if it's the same party of the president that appointed them. And given President Biden's slumping public approval ratings, given the fact that he has struggled with getting his agenda off the ground for public policy, it's a recognition that if he's going to make this move, he needs to do it now.
Justice Breyer, among all the justices, has made the case pretty prominently that we shouldn't think of justices as political or thinking about these succession issues and things like that. And yet you think this was on his mind?
It's on every justice's mind as they grow later in life to think about what their legacy will be. And certainly there was great concern about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And the thinking is now, looking back in retrospect, when you think about the fights that the Republicans and Democrats had, people look back and say, well, perhaps Justice Ginsburg should have retired much earlier. And I also want to address something that this view about the justices being political. You're absolutely correct, Rob, that Justice Breyer, you know, shied away from that. And if you look at his actual voting while on the court, typically, he is lumped in to be one of the three liberals still on the court. But of those, he was always considered to be the moderate liberal. And so that is also striking about Breyer's decision to step down right now.
I want to talk a little bit about Justice Breyer's term on the court. A lot of the write-ups, the analysts looking at this say he was somebody who worked to try to build consensus when he could, to negotiate with judges across the ideological boundaries. Do you think that's an accurate read?
It absolutely is, and it's empirically proven scientifically, you know, that if you look at his voting behavior, he was perhaps a bit more conservative compared to other Democratic appointees. He tended to have the smallest percentage of liberal votes, voting, you know, regularly with Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan, but compared to their voting records, certainly you could not say that he was more liberal than them. And he voted, for example, with the majority to allow the police to take DNA samples from people arrested. He has weighed in on any number of issues with a balanced perspective, is how I think people will look at Justice Breyer's legacy.
One thing that struck me yesterday, we had a pollster, Charles Franklin, on, a Wisconsin pollster, who had shared some of his numbers about what people think of individual Supreme Court justices. Justice Breyer stood out as the person the justice that people knew the least about. The most people said, I don't know enough about him to have an opinion one way or the other. Does that mean something?
Yeah. Only 20% of Americans said they were able to express an opinion about him. That's certainly not something you could have said about Justice Ginsburg or Justice Scalia. It is striking that he stayed below the radar. What he's also known for being on the court, is being one of the court's intellectuals, often asking questions that seemingly annoyed justices, other justices, because they seemed very intellectual and sometimes, you know, letting the debate drawing in. So it was really just him arguing with whoever the counsel was, arguing the case before the court. So I think that while many of the people appearing before the court are very aware of Breyer, it is clear that people outside the court may not even know he was on the court.
Talking to Kimmy King, professor, interim chair of the Political Science Department at the University of North Texas, one of our go-to Supreme Court watchers here on Central Time, talking about the retirement, the announced retirement of Justice Stephen Breyer, and the confirmation process with the nomination and then confirmation process coming up. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on this, your questions, your hopes, your fears. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Kimmy, we have President Biden saying he's going to appoint a black woman to the U.S. Supreme Court. Can you talk about the significance of that?
Well, it is important, and I think President Biden is also coming to terms with some of his own legacy that he have to deal with. He has to deal with. Remember that he oversaw the nomination of Supreme Court Justice Thomas to the bench, and the allegations made by Anita Hill, a black woman, that Thomas had harassed her, really pivoted everyone to what we look back and say the combination of that and a record number of women being elected to Congress claimed 1992 was the year of the woman. And so I think Biden has tried to rehabilitate some of his image that comes from those days, because it was clearly marked by the allegations that the committee was behaving in a racist manner and that black women would not get a fair hearing in front of the U.S. Congress. So that's no doubt playing part of where he's going. It's also an endeavor. Every president also looks to see what his legacy may be. And this in part allows him to create that legacy in much the same way that former President Obama was trying to recognize a changing society with his nomination of Sonia Sotomayor, the first Latina, to the Supreme Court.
There's been some criticism from Republicans along the lines of just pick the most qualified justice, don't go for a demographic. Others have pointed out that Ronald Reagan, coming into office, promised to appoint, said he was going to appoint a woman to the Supreme Court, who ended up being Sandra Day O'Connor. Do we have precedent for this kind of thing?
Absolutely. In fact, going back in time, you have seen different people say that there needed to be, and going back quite some time, a Jewish representative on the court. That there was a time when we had not seen anyone like that. And so I think that it's something that every president looks to. You also see that presidents talk about having different perspectives and ideological perspective that they want to see on the court. I think what President Biden will need to do as he moves forward, he tried to lay the groundwork a little bit yesterday by coming out swinging that he's going to choose the most qualified person for it. And that person is also going to be a woman, you know, a black woman. It's pretty clear that he recognizes he is going to have a bit of a challenge on this.
Kimmy King is with us from the University of North Texas. We're looking at the retirement of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer and the upcoming nomination and confirmation process. You can join in 800-642-1234. What are you hoping for from the nominee to replace Justice Breyer on the U.S. Supreme Court, whoever that might be? Are there issues where you want to know what a nominee for the Supreme Court thinks about it? What issues are those? What are your hopes for the confirmation process and how it's going to play out in the Senate? Do you have questions about how all this works? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with University of North Texas political scientist Kimmy King about the retirement of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer, officially announced yesterday to happen at the end of his term later this year. Now a nomination and confirmation process will kick off. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your reactions, your questions about how all this works. If you're on one side or the other, do you want to see this be a big process, a big debate in the Senate, or do you want to see smooth sailing? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring out a caller now. Kurt is with us in Milton. Kurt, hi.
Hello. Hey, you know, I also didn't know anything about Justice Breyer, and you know, maybe that's good. What you've said about him is really encouraging. So my observation on this is that I also think it's very good to have women represented and ethnic, you know, representation on the court. But I think that this announcement is not good. It makes it seem like a political thing, like this is a prerequisite. I think that it should be a tiebreaker. He should pick the best person that he wants, and then if you can't decide, then the female and the, you know, genetic makeup might be a tiebreaker.
Gotcha. Kurt, thanks for the call. Kimmy, what do you think about President Biden not doing what Kurt said, just putting that right on the table right off the bat?
So what's really interesting about the good points that your caller, you know, is making is that the nomination of judges and justices has always been political. In fact, going back to the reason why we even have judicial review today, Marbury v. Madison in 1803 was really fundamentally about a battle between the two parties at the time regarding the power of the president to be able to turn down appointments that potentially had been put forward by a prior president. And in terms of the issue, so it's always been political. It's just that it's become even more politicized and polarized as we've become more politicized as a society. In terms of an equal factor, that's exactly where, if you look at equal protection law, there's this, it depends on the area, whether it's employment or higher education. You cannot have a kind of quota, a numerical, you get it just because. It has to be a holistic review, or it's that otherwise equally qualified. And so you're going to have the qualifications to be there in the first place. I would point out, interestingly enough, that when they talked about Amy Coney Barrett and her nomination process and the fact that she came from Notre Dame, she was in some ways non-traditional if you looked at other justices who've been on the court, who have been from Ivy Leagues. And there was actually consternation in some ways that she was outside of the box. So as we look at these candidates, Biden and his team are going to be looking at a whole bunch of different things, including how they're going to get it through a divided Senate 50-50 without having to force the issue of having Kamala Harris, you know, do the tie-breaking vote. And so it is going to be, without a doubt, the same issues that get raised as we go through this confirmation process that your caller is raising.
Kurt, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Let's talk about that confirmation process now. The filibuster, where, you know, you need 60 votes to do things in the Senate, no longer applies, right, to Supreme Court justices. That's how Republicans were able to get a few nominees through over the President Trump's term. So how hard do you think it's going to be for Democrats to get 50 and maybe one more, or get that tiebreaker?
So, you know, what it really boils down to, and you've seen this with the concern about Senators Manchin and Sinema, who, you know, conservative Democrats who've helped to, they've assisted the Republicans in essentially blocking Biden's agenda in some ways. One of the things about nominating someone that has already been through the federal court nomination process, whether they've been a district court judge or an appellate court judge, the president can look to that and say, hey, Sinema and Manchin, you supported this person at the lower court levels. Why is it now when we're going to the Supreme Court, she is no longer qualified to serve? And it puts some of the onus back on people that might be opposed to a candidate he puts forward. And so I think Biden's going to weigh that heavily. And quite honestly, I think that that is going to overshadow everything that he does.
There was a lot of attention to, like, the Build Back Better Act. You mentioned Senators Manchin and Sinema not getting on board to overcome the filibuster on that. How have Democrats held together, though, on all those other court appointments? And there have been a lot of them, right?
Actually, what's striking about Sinema and Manchin, that if you look at their support for Biden's lower court nominees, they have not opposed a single one. And so that's definitely something that everybody is looking to, and why the people on President Biden's shortlist are thought, in some ways, the top candidates where they are placed. And it's because of having that prior support. And you've even seen in Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, the fact that she has district court and court of appeal approval and had some Republican support even at the lowest court level. So that's going to be another issue even to go after Republicans on.
Talking to Kimmy King from the University of North Texas about Justice Stephen Breyer's retirement announcement this week and the upcoming process to replace him. You dropped one name there, Kimmy. Can you talk about who people's eyes are on right now as possible nominees?
So in my mind, the person that is out front the most and is getting the most attention is Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, who was confirmed last year to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. And the reason why the D.C. Circuit is so important is it's considered to be one of the most powerful appellate courts in the country. She also has a history as a former public defender. That, too, would make her different from some of the other people who have been appointed to a Supreme Court justice. Strikingly about Brown Jackson, it offers an opportunity to kind of get a kind of payback a little bit, because she replaced the now Attorney General Merrick Garland, who you may remember was a failed attempt on the part of the Obama administration to try to get him appointed. And so she actually replaced him on the D.C. Circuit. And so people are looking at her because she's already been involved in a case involving, say, for example, the White House documents that they should be released to the Congressional Committee reviewing January 6th. And so it's thought that she's kind of proved some of her governmental capacity there for recognizing support for policies that the Biden administration supports. And every president tries to put judges or justices on the bench that they think will fulfill their legacy. And you saw that even with former President Trump being unhappy about some decisions that came out of judges and justices themselves, that he felt he deserved more support from them because he had been responsible for their appointments. And that's not how it works. Just because Biden puts whoever this is on the bench, that is absolutely no guarantee that they are going to back the president's policies, as presidents have learned all too well in difficult times.
Even supposing that President Biden nominates someone, they get confirmed that they're more or less reliably liberal on the court. In the near term, how much difference does that make with the, to be crass, 6-3 conservative majority?
Yeah, really not clear. What does this make any difference at all? And here's where it gets interesting, that justices themselves can change over the life of their vote, or they may turn out to not be the justice that the president hoped that they would be. And you have seen out of Justice Gorsuch and out of Chief Justice Roberts, they have departed from their conservative colleagues. What's striking about Breyer leaving the court is that he did have a little bit of an ability to cobble together, it seems, we don't know really the inner workings of the court, to kind of moderate more some of these schisms between conservatives and liberals. And that's why he did not like those labels and thought that they were worthless for looking at the court. But in terms of actually making changes on the ground for where we are right now and cases that are pending in the court or might be up next year, it's not clear that it makes any difference at all.
In our last minute or so, Kimmy, Justice Breyer is still on the court. There's some big issues before the court. We're waiting for decisions or about to hit the court. What do you have your eye on in particular?
Oh, gosh. There are so many different ones. I think the one that everybody is watching, that everybody is going to be talking out, are going to be the abortion cases that are out there right now. I'm down in Texas, but we've also got a case out of Mississippi that everyone is watching very closely. Any issue related to immigration, all the things that are big picture right now, right? You're going to want to watch because Democrats are going to use it to say, see, this is why you need to leave us in power. We need to change the balance of power on the court moving forward. So those hot issues, abortion, immigration, criminal procedure has been one of those as well in the past, but it doesn't seem to be playing such a dominant role right now. And then, of course, there may be cases that are coming up that relate to former President Trump and any level of litigation that's currently moving through the courts relating to him. Those are all going to be ones that potentially have the ability to leave a mark on Breyer's legacy if he doesn't sort of make statements as he's going out the door about what he thinks about these issues.
Kimmy, as always, thanks for joining us today.
Always good to be a part of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to talk to you, Rob.
You too. That's Kimmy King, professor and interim chair of political science at the University of North Texas, looking at the latest on the Supreme Court.